share. All right. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning and welcome to the March 12, 2026 special meeting of the Orange County Human Relations Commission. The agenda contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. Public participation is encouraged in person and via Zoom. Public comment will be accepted during the open forum portion of the meeting. If you are attending in person and wish to speak during open forum, please complete a speaker request form and turn it into the clerk prior to the start of open forum. If you are participating via Zoom and would like to speak during open forum, please click the raised hand icon in Zoom or dial *9 when open forum is called. When you are called upon to make your comment, unmute yourself or dial *6. For those calling in, you will be called upon by your telephone number. Please state your name if you wish to identify yourself prior to speaking. Speakers will be given 3 minutes to speak, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. Before we get to our open forum, I'm calling the meeting to order. And with that, I'd like to open the quote or reflection to Joanne, who will lead us with him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I would like to first bring a little attention to what's going on in Michigan right now. It's pretty shocking, but we can hope that things can get resolved and that we don't continue to see these type of incidents with all that's going on in the world right now. A month ago, we lost a prominent civil rights leader, Jesse Jackson. Civil rights leader, not only in our country, but internationally. He did so much for the civil rights and peace in the world. And so I found a little clip of him when he was on Sesame Street, and I felt it was in line with our mission, and it's just very powerful seeing him speaking with the kids. So,
all right,
roll. Oh, you have
give,
it.
Give me a minute, hold on, okay. See if this works. Oh, it's not working. Not working. It won't let me.
It won't come on.
No, it won't.
And we don't have a mic today, so I'm going to try to just see if we can play it. You'll just hear it. And oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize. We had been having some technical stuff this morning, so I can just sound.
Okay, here we go. I am somebody. Somebody. Maybe young. Somebody. In your welfare. But I am. Somebody. Maybe small. But I am somebody. I may make a mistake. But I am somebody. Clothes are different. My face is different. My hair is different. But somebody. I am black. White. Speak a different language. But I must be respected, protected, never rejected. I am God's child. Yeah. Somebody. Let's have a big hand.
Maybe we can include that link in our minutes.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah, try, yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Joey. Moving on to the next item, monthly summary of commission activities. Are there any to be shared?
Did you share?
Not hearing any. We will move to open forum at this time. Members of the public may address the commission on any matters within the jurisdiction of the commission. and we may limit the length of time to address the commission.
We do have two speakers in person. Bobby McDonald is the first one.
Okay. Good morning, Commission. Glad to be here. Bobby McDonald with the Black Chamber of Commerce in Orange County, and also a member of the Orange County Black Solidarity Network. I had an opportunity to look at the agenda before the meeting, and I'm very, very encouraged about the PowerPoint that we're going to see in his district attorney's plan, especially with some of the things that are happening now in the community. I think it's more the piece that stood out most to me is being able to create that hate crime and hate incident port. That's the, I feel, in my estimation, that's the major, major piece in the program, because now it's going to give our members in our community that have an opportunity to call somebody or contact somebody other than different organizations we've had in the past. So I want to bring that to your attention this morning. Looking forward to being part of the group and helping out with the plan. And thank you very kindly for allowing me to speak this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our second speaker is, I might butcher your name, Ilana Maravich.
I don't know if there's a particular place to stand when he speaks, so I'll just stand a little bit. First of all, I wanted to thank the DA's office and the commission for taking on this important matter of the hate crimes reporting, particularly in light of what's going on in Michigan right now with the active shooter situation. As you know, we in the Jewish community have been targeted for quite a while now. I speak on behalf of the Jewish Community Action Network. We're a grassroots organization that advocates for the Jewish community. And one thing really resonated with me with what Reverend Jack just said, which is, you know, we are here, we want to be respected, we want to be heard, never rejected and accepted. And that's really all that we ask, right? But recently we've all been subjected for collateral blame for what is happening in other parts of the world. Unfortunately, we don't control what's happening in the world. And so we really appreciate the attention that is given. It starts with words. It's now turning into violence, into action. Just a couple of days ago, there was a case in San Jose where two Israelis were sitting at a restaurant and basically just speaking Hebrew. And they were physically assaulted by three young men who started hurling slurs against them, not just about Israel, but about being Jewish. So apparently all you have to do now is speak a language of a country that you don't agree with, and it invites a hate crime. We know that the DA's office is very involved right now and looking at doing more training around that. It's complicated. We're always having a hard time explaining it to our own people. So we appreciate all that work. More work is going to be needed. We're so polarized right now that it's scary. And we appreciate anybody that stands up, whether it's with us or with the Blacks or with anybody else. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mine is asking to speak, and that was all I've received.
Thank you. Do we have any hearing speakers or presentations?
DA one is later.
Right, we'll look to that later. The next item four, is our action item, which is to conduct elections for commission chair and vice chair for 2026 calendar year. I would like to say it has been such a pleasure to serve as the commission chair this past year. It is not lost on me that our work here isn't even close to done. Just driving in, hearing about what's happening in Michigan, but it's happening all the time. It's not lost on me that we meet four times a year, but not today, but many times, even just at our meetings, we have Zoom speakers spouting hate. Our work is not done. I'm very, very proud of the progress we've made in the last year. It would be my honor to continue to serve as chair if the group would have me, but I would offer up myself to continue to serve in that role.
I would like to nominate you to continue as chair.
Thank you so much. Do we take a vote on the whole thing, or do we do one at a time?
I just can see if there's any other nominations for chair.
Nominations.
Okay, then you can vote on a slate if you wish, or you can vote individually.
Does anyone want to continue to serve as a vice chair? John, would you be interested?
I would be interested.
I'd like to nominate Joanne to be vice chair. Right. We'll do that as a slate then.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Abstention? It is unanimous. Well, thank you very much. to my fellow members to have the opportunity to continue to do this great work with you. I'm grateful. We'll move on now to the information items. Number five is receive updated presentation from Orange County District Attorney's Office on DOJ Hate Crimes Grant.
I'm assuming it's okay if we go, I'm sure.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You ready for us?
We're ready. Take it away.
Okay. This is always a very difficult conversation for me to have, and I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of insight why. So I just got back from Birmingham's. Some of my staff who are here came back from Birmingham for a different kind of reason, different conference, different event. I was at the Secret Service School in Hoover, and so that's just a little suburb outside. And, you know, I went to the Civil Rights Museum in Birmingham, and if you haven't had a chance to be there, it's a very, very moving experience. It's like, and I apologize for getting a little upset, it's like going to a Holocaust museum. If you've been to a Holocaust museum, it's a very difficult. This subject matter is so near and dear to me. Some of you might ask, why the district attorney's office versus another organization? And what's motivating all of us to be working in this space? And I'm really actually kind of surprised I'm getting this emotional, so let me just take a deep breath. When I was in eighth grade, I had a knife pulled on me. Most of us don't even remember what we were doing or what this eighth grade was all about. For me, that was more than 55 years ago. But I got a knife pulled on me because of my religion. I remember who it was, what class I was in, what time of day, and what was going on in my life, right? And when you're a victim of hate, you can describe it, but you carry hate and these incidents with you your entire life. They affect everything you do. And to be right discerned because of your race, religion, creed, what you look like, what you believe in, who you want to love, a lot of those characteristics we can't change. They're external characteristics, and people judge us because of those characteristics. Many of you don't know, I don't even know if the DA's office even knows this. I think Susie might know, Kimberly knows it. Bobby, I think, even knows it. When I ran for school board, my very first office in 1992 in Brea, I wasn't married yet, had no kids. And I was running against an incumbent. And so the rumor around the community was to drum up sentiment against me, was that I was gay and I was a pedophile. And that I wanted to be around young children as a school board member because I was going to prey on these young kids. I mean, I'm in the middle of an election and this is what I'm facing, right? My very first office. And so I was attacked with a knife in eighth grade because of my religious beliefs. But I was judged based upon perceived characteristics that aren't true, but still they were used against me. What's going on in the world today? Some of you may know I was asked by the board to sit on this commission, and I asked not to, because our role in the office is to really kind of step back and not be advocates. Like, we need to be perceived as leading a particular issue, which we are in this case, and Susie's going to obviously talk about it. But it's very, very important for public perception and public, I think, trust that they just see us as impartial and kind of neutral and not necessarily driving an agenda. But you all need to know that I feel very, very strongly about it, both personally and because of my own life experiences. And some of you may be very familiar with something I say over and over again. I don't care who you love, but I care who you hate. And the world is full of judgment right now. Everybody has an opinion about everybody else, and it's not only exercising itself in terms of language, it's now manifesting itself in terms of violence. But unless you stand in the Civil Rights Museum in Birmingham and or Holocaust Museum, and you see what humanity is capable of doing against other human beings, you see burned out buses, right? You see crosses on lawns. You see impromptu graves with hundreds of bodies coming out of gas chambers. Unless you are willing to go understand that and experience that, either through your own life experiences or trying to understand through history, a lot of people don't, they don't care. It's just not part of their day. But this is part of our day. And I feel very strongly that Orange County can do it a lot better, that we all should be working together and committed to advancing an intolerance, that we won't stand for this. And I do want to mention the Mayfield case. I don't know if many of you are familiar with it, but Mayfield was a white supremacist who attacked an African-American woman up in Fullerton at the bus station. And he had two prior convictions for hate, so he had two strikes. And we were prosecuting him for that event. And this woman was pregnant, and he said he was going to drop her baby. And I was just absolutely horrified by the set of circumstances. And one of our North Court judges was willing to strike his prior activity, something called strikes, and give him 2 years in state prison for a third strike, which he was facing 38 years to life. I went to court. I took the report, the hate crimes report, which I, as a county supervisor for 12 years, have had to approve, right, on 12 different occasions. And I said to this judge, Judge Robbins, I'm like, Your Honor, do you even know about the hate crimes? Like, are you even sensitive to this issue that you're now adjudicating? He had never seen or heard of the hate crimes report. I showed it to him. I explained to him the statistics against African-Americans in our county. It's disproportionate. Right, we have disproportionate hate against a very small percentage of our population. So he changed the offer. I think he changed it from 2 years to five. And I still was deeply offended. So the defendant took the offer, and he was sentenced to 5 years. And so we appealed that to the Fourth District Court of Appeal. And Justice Bedsworth, who's now retired, Bill Bedsworth, who used to work in our office, but was on the bench, the appellate court, for like 25 years, just retired. He's writing a column down in the Orange County Register. He reversed the judge in North Court and said it was an abuse of discretion. For the lawyers in the room and anybody who cares about the law, like, to get a judge reversed on abuse of discretion is like nearly impossible. The appellate courts are very differential to trial courts in terms of their judgment. And the court said, no. This Mayfield guy, he's the poster child for hate. And he deserves to go to prison for the rest of his life. So the case came back down. We prosecuted it. It was tried by our hate crimes unit. And he was convicted. And I think he got, 32 years or 27 years. So he's going to be away for a long time. And I say another thing that I believe unequivocally. There's just some people that have to be disassociated from society. They don't deserve to live amongst us. We don't have to put up with them. And We, these amazing people in the district attorney's office and law enforcement in this county, we're deeply committed to this process. Like, we care deeply about this, and we're very committed to this process. But I'm here today because I'm not sure people really understand why we're so motivated to work so hard to combat hate in Orange County. But what I love about our county, and, you know, I've been here for 36 years now in some role. We're all in this together. Like, we really have a good sense of place here. And when I went on the Mayfield case, and I appeared, of course, you know, the NAACP came, Pastor Whitlock came from Christ Our Redeemer, a good friend of mine. The ADL came. Like, I organized a group of individuals and groups to let the court know, like, this is not acceptable. And sometimes when I go to court, judges will say to me, "Oh, are you trying to lobby me? Are you trying to influence me?" And I'm like, and I say, "Absolutely." Like, they look at me like there's something wrong with that. Like, last time I checked, advocacy is okay. Like, you need to be an advocate for your position, right? So I hope you appreciate that. I wanted to share that with you because I wanted you to understand where I come from and what I faced in my own life and why I think all of us have our life experiences, and we are very, very sensitized. And the people that are sitting behind me and Susie are really, really, really good public servants and warriors to make sure we don't have hate in this county. And if people want to engage in hate, there's going to be serious consequences. And we will go to court and we will fight all the time. And I will tell you this, I just was told last week, the judges, we've been getting like pretty good dispositions on our hate crimes, because I think the courts are realizing like we have this going on. Like, so I want you to know, Madam Chair and members of the commission, like, the work you're doing is not like behind the scenes and it's not unappreciated or maybe not noticed. It is very noticed. And the more we organize, I think, around the grant, Bobby talked about the portal, the more we get more certainty with the Attorney General on how hate crimes are reported, and we get more consistency, and we work as a county to lead that conversation for the entire state of California, things are going to get better. And that's our responsibility. The good woman from the NAACP told me this morning that their job now is to mentor the young ones who are coming up. Those are the people who have to take responsibility for what we're leading now. But the Jesse Jacksons of the world, the Martin Luther Kings, right? They're going to pass. We're not going to be here. And at some point, it's our responsibility to make sure we set the groundwork and we set up the foundation for those who are going to be responsible after us to carry this work on. That is really, really an important legacy that I feel strongly we're responsible. So with that, Madam Chair, if it's okay, I'll have Susie take over.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to highlight the updates of our U.S. Department of Justice Hate Crimes Grant. It's like the... This one's not mine.
Your keyboard?
Because it worked earlier.
It did work earlier.
I don't know.
You will not click
it. It worked earlier. I tried it. Oh, yeah, there it goes.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. I'll stay close just in case. So the first thing I want to do is acknowledge our partners in this space. We've reached out to all of you, and we've reached out to the Board of Supervisors and asked for their help in giving us some connections with community-based organizations. I'm very happy that many of them are here today. Todd, if I can just sneak behind you here. We have had an opportunity to work with so many community-based organizations, and with every single meeting that we've had, we've talked to them about the HRC, your role. We invited several of them to be here today, but thus far, since initiating this grant at the direction of our district attorney, because it was very important to him that we meet with the CBOs before we do any training. Because what he said is, if we're continuing to talk about what we already know, then we're not really advancing this work. We need to meet with the CBOs and find out what it is are they seeing, what do they need from us. So thus far, at his direction, we've met with Groundswell multiple times. It's been wonderful. Heritage Council, we've met with the New Covenants Church in Santa Ana. We've met with Rabbi Greenwald, with a Temple B'nai Israel. The LGBTQ Center of Orange County is actually going to be our facilitator for our very first training. So we have a strong partnership with Peg and her team. We've met with Jay Can, who's here today. We've met with the NAACP, who are here today. We've met with the Orange County Asian Pacific Islander Community Alliance. That was a really fantastic meeting with the Asian American Senior Center, the Orange County Department of Education, who's here today to support these efforts and to show you their role in our partnership. We met yesterday with the Latino Health Access Team. That was a really positive meeting. And then the Jewish Federation of Orange County, who's also here today. We thank all of our partners for being here today. Before I go into the update on the grant, I do want to acknowledge some of our behind the scenes heroes, the people that do all of the grant administration and wait for a very long time for DOJ approval for everything. Lori Stevens and Eric Chow from our administrative team are here. And I invited them here today because sometimes they don't get to see the fruits of their labor, and I'm hoping that they do and they join us in the future. Our hate crimes team is here. Kyle Molchan, Deputy District Attorney, Courtney Glazier Mepfumo, who is actually the designated DOJ hate crimes grant. She works on this grant full time. And Rick Myshock, also a deputy district attorney, who is in our hate crimes unit. And then from our media relations team, our public affairs director, Kimberly Eds, is here. Her role and her team's role is vital and for us to be able to effectuate some of these goals that we have. So as all of you know, we applied for a grant about 2 years ago. We applied for $400,000 grant for 2 years. We had so many support letters and so many partnerships that the DOJ actually wrote us back and said, you know, we're giving you $1.6 million and extending the grant to 4 years. So they viewed this as a regional leadership grant. And so with that, we're tasked with a broader aspect than what we have done in the past. Our partners in this endeavor are, of course, the County of Orange, community-based organizations, our K-12 partners, our law enforcement partners, as well as higher education institutions like universities. We have already met with Chapman and Cal State Fullerton, and we hope to expand those partnerships and do some outreach on campuses. Each of these different entities brings a different aspect to the table in terms of hate crimes and hate crimes education and what the needs are. So we're really partnering with them about what they need and what we determine that they need that we can provide. First of all, the biggest issue is what is a hate crime versus a hate incident? This is a conversation that we've had at every one of our meetings with the CDOs. The hate crimes are defined under the Penal Code under section 422.55 sub A. And they involve a criminal act that's based upon a protected classification or perceived characterization of the victim. But you have to have a crime and then a bias motive, and then you have a hate crime. A hate incident, on the other hand, is an incident that might occur as a result of bias towards someone that's a perceived characteristic, but there's no crime associated with it. So I give people the example all the time. I'm of Middle Eastern descent. If somebody walks up to me at the gas station and says, "You're a terrorist, I don't like you," that's unpleasant. I don't want to hear it, but it is not a crime. If they walk up to me and they punch me in the face, that is a crime, but it may not be a hate crime. If they walk up to me, punch me in the face and say, "I don't like you because you're a terrorist," then we have a hate crime. So one of the things that we're going to be doing is educating people on the difference between a hate crime and a hate incident, because every single day we get calls from community members who are convinced that a member of their community was a victim of a hate crime. And we have to have some of those difficult conversations. For every crime, it's like a recipe. There are ingredients. We call them elements. So it's beyond just what's in the penal code. We have to look beyond that and look at the elements of the crime to determine if a crime was committed. Currently, there's no reporting mechanism in the state of California or in the nation that reports hate incidents. Now, we did reach out to California versus Hate, the civil rights division for the state of California. We had a wonderful conversation with them. I'm proud to say that one of our partners in this endeavor is United Way 211. We did reach out to them first thing and asked them to partner with us. They would have been here today, but I got an apology email first thing this morning that something came up. But they define it as acts of hate. And that can include the first scenario I gave you as the hypothetical for myself, but it could also include the third scenario I gave you as the hypothetical for myself. They don't distinguish it. Under the law, the only entity that can make a determination as to whether something is a hate crime or a hate incident is the district attorney. And so what we're going to do as part of this grant is create a portal. But before I do that, I'll share with you just, this is a little flow chart that you should have in your packet. And it basically talks about how we determine. So a police report comes into us, police officers do an investigation,
They give the report over to our office. We look at the report and we determine whether all of the elements of that crime have been met beyond a reasonable doubt. Not, we don't like this, this feels icky, this person's probably guilty of something. We can't do that. We have to look at every element and determine, are they guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? And if so, we can file the case. We have the option to file a case. We have the option to reject a case or send it back for further investigation. If we file the case, that's when the criminal justice process starts. Our key deliverables are stakeholder engagement and community outreach. And creating, we have actually five components. So CBO communication is one, law enforcement training that's post-certified. So we have the first in the state of California post-certified multi-day hate crimes training. And the reason it's multi-day is because day two of our training, which will be on April 20th and 21st, day two is a restorative justice cultural competence piece. We will have a panel that will be facilitated by the LGBTQ Center, and it will have on there representatives from the Jewish community, from the Muslim community, from the Hispanic community, and from the Black community. We look forward and we look for you to give us suggestions of additional communities that should be included as we do more of these panels. We're also gonna have a restorative justice piece where we're gonna have a victim speak about their experience and a panel on victim services. We're also gonna be developing, or we have developed, we're in the process of developing a workshop for teachers and administrators through K through 12. And we're partnering with the Orange County Department of Education on that. And I believe that training is on the 24th of April. And that will be at the district attorney's office. So we'll be presenting, co-presenting with them, and DDA Glazier Metfumo will be presenting on behalf of our office. The thing that Mr. McDonald talked about is our data portal. That seems to be what everyone's excited about. In a moment, Krysalyn's gonna talk to you about the data portal. She's gonna actually preview it. All of you had a chance to see the data portal. Some of you provided feedback to me directly. Thank you. Krysalyn and I incorporated that feedback into this final version. This portal will go onto our website. It'll hopefully have a QR code that will be disseminated to every CBO, to the county, and to every law enforcement agency. It is our hope that individuals and community members can use that portal. They can report on there anonymously, or they can report on there with their information if they want services. DDA Glazier Metfumo will look at the portal as every entry comes in. She will determine if it's a hate crime or a hate incident. And every individual, whether it turns out to be a crime or just a hate incident, will get a follow-up call from a victim advocate who's received trauma-informed counseling through the Waymakers program. That victim advocate will reach out to them and offer them emergency services, such as finances if they may need those to pay utilities and other bills. Volunteer to meet with them with the police department if that's what they'd like to do, and also offer them services such as group and individual therapy. We will work with other community partners in terms of those options, the therapy options, and also to make sure that we have language access. I just came back from the Yucatan on Sunday, and I can tell you, just even in Mexico, there were different dialects. And when we met with our Asian community leaders, there are so many dialects. We will need to rely upon our community-based organizations to help, because without language access, we have nothing. So that's gonna be important to us. This is an overview for you. We're currently in the community outreach one-on-one meeting phase. We hope to graduate into small group discussions with multiple CBOs. We hope to have the hate crime portal go live. It probably won't go live this month, but we're hopeful that it'll go live hopefully in April. Our post-certified law enforcement training and K through 12 workshops will be in April. And then we'll continue to do community outreach with possibly doing listening sessions. The grant does have funding for meeting facilitation. So we've told all the CBOs, if they would like to host a meeting and facilitate it with their communities, our grant has funding for that. And we would welcome that opportunity. We've also made the same offer to all of the Board of Supervisors, and some of them have been very receptive about that. And then from the rest of the year, we're just going to continue to do that. These are the grant objectives. So right now we're trying to meet every objective, and then we'll continue to repeat it for the remainder of the grant. The grant will go, and then these are just additional slides that kind of show the timeline and where we hope to go with the future of this grant.
We're very excited about it. We've had a great partnership with the CEO's office through working with Jessica and Chrislyn, and all of you have been fantastic in communicating with us. And we just wanted to make sure we came and gave you an update, see if you had any direction for us. The one thing I will put on this commission's radar is at some point we will have data in the hate incident portal, and we will need your assistance of what do we do with that data. Data is really important. I will tell you right now, we expect the numbers to go up. You know why? We're working on encouraging reporting. So I've been very clear with all the CBOs, when the numbers go up, please don't go out and hold press conferences and say, oh my God, the numbers went up. We expect the numbers to go up because we're trying to encourage reporting. In fact, just recently, DDA Glazier Metfumo was tasked, since this is all she's working on, she was able to give it a really deep dive. And she found that in addition to the penal code section that I already shared with all of you, there are penal code sections that apply for crimes against religious institutions. They were not being captured in our previous data. Also, if an individual was committing crimes in multiple cities that resulted in one criminal case that captured all those as different counts, it was underreporting the amount of hate crimes. So Courtney and her team, her supervisors, actually met with the DOJ, I mean the AG's team, and said, there are fundamental flaws in your form. And so they've agreed to kind of look at our feedback. They were not interested in our redacted or our corrected reports from last year, because Courtney said we should look back at what we did last year and include these areas that were uncaptured. And the AG's office said, we're not interested in past years, even though they're different. We did provide those past years to the CEO's office. But those things are going to happen, and it's a good thing. It's a little bit of a growing pain while we learn how to make sure that we're completely comprehensive in our data collection methodologies and that we're including and capturing everything so that everyone's voice is heard. That's very important to us. So we ask for your patience and partnership as we go through the process of fine-tuning. The district attorney actually is supporting the potential creation of a task force to further improve the AG's reporting form. And that would be fantastic. When Courtney called the AG's office, she learned that we were one of two prosecuting agencies to ever reach out to them about questions about the form. And if you're a lawyer and you read the form, there's issues with every single one of the questions. They're very vague. For example, they say dismissals. How many dismissals? Well, to the average person who's reading it, they would think, wow, the DA's offices are just doing a lot of dismissals. Well, we have something called judicial diversion. And we also have a very active diversion program in our office. So if someone is given the opportunity to take life skills classes or do a restorative justice course with the ADL and their case is dismissed at the end of it, that's counted as a dismissal. But that seems as though it's something that the DA's office didn't take seriously. So we're working with them to improve the form. And I stand ready to answer your questions if you have any. And I think I've given all of you cards except Commissioner Briceño. I'll give you one. Feel free to reach out to me afterwards.
I just want to add, it is very frustrating in the community. And I think this is one of the issues with Groundswell. They had a lot of intake individuals who were taking information from the community, and then they were deciphering whether that goes into a hate crime or hate incident category. And I think that was a little frustrating for the Board of Supervisors, and it's frustrating for me because you have a great organization like Groundswell, but you have the state of California that's not capturing incidents, and incidents can be just as meaningful to the victim as the crime itself. So it's dismissing like my story, right? That was a hate crime that occurred to me in eighth grade, but if it was just his words that he had said to me, I'm still a victim and I still feel harmed, but somehow society isn't acknowledging it. I don't think that's right. I was in Sacramento yesterday meeting with both chairs of the Public Safety Committee, and we have a lot of resources in this county that are dedicated to working with the legislature. So, and I have a very good relationship with Mr. Bonta and his wife, Mia. Mia is a legislator as well, and she's carried legislation for me as well. So again, why are we not having a complete conversation about this? How does the state report today? We are, I think, really leading the conversation for the entire state right now. We could use your commission. We could utilize the work we're doing, the CBOs, and we should be able to come up with a whole set of recommendations of how we can do things better, where there are gaps. And then if we can ask the AG, maybe they could do it administratively, but maybe they're going to need state law changes and they're going to need funding to help them provide the resources to capture incidents. Like, they can't do that without resources. So these are all things. I mean, some of you know I was in the legislature for 6 years. I mean, I try to bring, every day my background to try to solve problems. So I think we're really, really on a good road, but we do need your help to something Susie said. I saw you acknowledge it, but I need to underscore it. If the numbers do go up, everybody's going to say, see, under bad Orange County, way more hate than they wanted to acknowledge. Like, that's so unfair, because we're in a transition period where we're really trying to get it right. And to be, castigated for trying to do something well, and you're in a transition period, we all get it. But we just need to put some more pieces on the field. So appreciate it, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
One of the things that we grappled with initially before the partnership under the grant was understanding how multiple reports of one hate incident may be quantified. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if someone is off the freeway holding a banner that people perceive as a hate incident and multiple drivers report that into the portal, how does that get reported?
Yeah, that's what we call the nextdoor.com phenomenon, because it's the same, it's one act of conduct. So that's a situation where the amount of specificity that they put into the portal, and Chrislyn will showcase the portal in a minute, will be very helpful, because if we're able to look at the date and the location and then the conduct, we can quickly determine if it's the same conduct or not. And then Courtney would count it as one.
But each victim would still receive the benefit of an outreach and services.
Yes, we would contact every person who's reporting something that happened to them, or we tell the CBOs, you can still have your own reporting mechanism. We just ask you to report it onto the portal as well, so that we have what you have. But yes, we will reach out, and in that kind of a situation, it might be helpful for us to maybe communicate with a CBO to do some sort of a community, these are community trauma incidents. In a situation like the hypothetical that you mentioned, it might be good to have a community workshop or a community peer support type of situation. So we'll work with our CBOs to design those. I'll tell you right now, for that particular scenario, I don't have a remedy or a treatment in mind, but we would work with 211. I just reached out to them this morning. Like, we're really looking for you to be a partner to us to help us come up with resources that meet the need, so we can meet victims where they're at.
Where are we with 211? I know you mentioned they're not here, but you've spoken with them. Are they going to partner, or you're working through that?
Well, we're going to partner with them, but not in a financial sense. My understanding is their grant, the California versus Hate grant, sunsets in June anyway. So all of the California versus Hate programs will be sunsetting in June, which is why the groups that we've been working with, like Groundswell, are very happy that we're doing this work, because they want someone to pick it up. What I would love to do is at a later phase, and talking with the district attorney, he would love for us to be able to host meetings, like quarterly meetings, where all the community-based organizations come together. And I know that's something, is it El Capica? Did I say it right? Oh, Kafka did. And so we're working with Nikki on that. And so we're hoping to pick that work up, because their funding sunsets in June.
Please invite us, the commissioners.
Absolutely.
We get left off. Thank you so much. I also wanted to ask, in terms of whether you receive any type of retrospective reporting, is there any kind of place where you start off? So say, for example, is the day that you launched the portal, someone reports something from 3 years ago, but they didn't have a place to put it, or something like that. Is that going to be reported, and how far back are we going? Because we know, for example, I think 2023 or four, where we were missing critical information.
Three is when we started.
Yeah, so we missed some critical information. So I don't know that people would do that, but if they did, that would still come forward, just retrospective.
Yeah, I mean, that's a further conversation that I probably need to have with the district attorney once the data starts coming in. And frankly, I imagine that's a place where this commission could provide some recommendations, because we don't know what data will come in. And we certainly are not going to preclude people from putting things in, because let's say something happened 3 years ago and it was by an employer. We're not talking about employee rights type situation, but something that's overtly a crime, right? And it comes in, and then we see that there's something else coming in with that employer. Okay, now this is information where the statute of limitations for the prior offense may have run, but we might have other acts that are within the same mode of operation for this individual that would be relevant to a criminal filing. So we'd have to really take a look at it. And that's a question that we got asked yesterday by the Latino Health Access Center. It was the first time anyone had asked that question. So it's a unique question, but it's one of those things where we're gonna have to see what comes in and then kind of figure out how do we capture it in reporting and then how do we address it in prosecution. If it's a felony, it's you can file it for up to 3 years.
So, yeah, and I understand certainly whether or not you prosecute something versus whether or not we learn about it. Those are different things.
And it has to be fully investigated. Mm-hmm. And you got to bake in the investigative period with the jurisdiction of the law enforcement agency where the event occurred. So we got to build that in. And then that has to be considered because the statute of limitations is tick-tocking. Even during that period of the investigation, once it becomes to our, it comes to our knowledge.
Whether when it's discovered or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question I had was, is there any budget in the grant for promoting or advertising the portal?
Yes, we have a very extensive advertising budget. So we will be, we look for you. Obviously, the portal, the QR code will be made available to all of our partners. And so it'll go on all of the collateral that they're already creating within their own organizations and police departments within their own collateral. We'll be able to include it. The county, certainly, with all the work that they're doing, they'll be able to include it. But then our office will create brochures. Our hope is to create brochures, flyers. And then every time we go out to a community meeting and every training that we do, we'll pass out that collateral.
Is that something that you could get put in the courthouse or courthouses? Is that...
That's a good idea. Like in the digital screens or the actual paper?
Either.
Yes. Yeah.
Might be useful.
I think that's a really great idea. I hadn't thought about it, but we could certainly look into that. Certainly in the DA's office lobby, sure. Which is a very busy, busy place. For victims and suspects.
Exactly. I only have one other question, which is, and I assume this is highly regulated because you have grant money involved here, but are there benchmarks or performance indicators that you already have outlined that you'll be able to reflect back? And can you explain to us when you'll do that and how often?
Yes, the grant is very specific in terms of our timeline. The grant was a little bit on pause at first because we weren't sure how the executive orders affected our grant because we thought it might be considered DEI. So it took us a while to establish that, no, we may proceed. So we proceeded. It took us a while to finalize the budget, but we meet regularly with and that's what the two heroes in the back do. We meet regularly with our DOJ project manager. So I'm the project manager on behalf of the district attorney's office, along with our admin team. And we meet regularly to go over our performance objectives, and we have to provide backup materials for everything. So we keep activity logs, we keep attendance logs, all of that. It is highly regulated.
And can you share at all how you measure those indicators? Is it a matter of, I assume we're going to have an increase in reporting, but is that part of how you measure it, or is it purely the work you're doing out of your office?
Purely the work that we're doing. So the five factors, standard prosecution, which the district attorney created a hate crimes unit long before we received this grant. So we've already been doing that work, but Courtney is going to be dedicated to prosecuting hate crimes exclusively. So that's the first one. The second one is law enforcement training. So doing these post-certified. The third one is K-12 education and outreach. The fourth one, and probably the most important one, no offense to OCDE, is our community-based organization engagement. And then the fifth one, which is a new one that we added after the grand jury report came out, was the creation of the portal. So the data portal was not part of our original grant. We actually had to do a budget modification for that because of the grand jury report. And frankly, because the grand jury had requested the sheriff's department do it. And so we partnered with the sheriff's department because they're in no position to be making a determination about a crime versus a hate incident. I mean, certainly Ms. Azadi can because she's a lawyer, but that's not really the work. That's the work of our office. And so the sheriff's department said, yes, absolutely. You know, we'll partner with you on this. And they did. They served on our committee to help create the portal.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Commissioners, do you have any questions?
I did. I wanted to really applaud the district attorney and your office. Taking this type of a leadership role, especially when it comes to documenting hate incidents, is very courageous. And it's something that has been a significant gap and frankly can only be handled by the district attorney's office in the way that it's being handled. And so I was lucky to be a part of the creation of the portal and on that committee. And I am just incredibly encouraged by what this foundation is going to create, as a district attorney mentioned, for generations to come. This isn't about the shift or the delta in the numbers now. It's about documenting the hate incidents and truly educating the community that there is no space for hate in Orange County, and we have to start somewhere. And this is really going to open the eyes to individuals. And so I am incredibly encouraged. The staff that you've assigned have been just incredibly involved and engaged from my perspective and from the Sheriff's Department's perspective. And so I personally am just incredibly grateful. There's no doubt that this is not just a leading movement in California, but frankly, it's missing in a lot of areas within the country. And so I look forward to seeing how this is going to evolve over time. And one of the issues that had come up was, well, this is coming from the district attorney's office. And so as a result, people aren't gonna wanna come forward. They don't wanna be involved in the prosecution. They're more scared. There's a reality to being a victim of a hate crime. And the information that you shared about the community-based organizations and educating our youth and understanding that these different steps need to occur, and I think will open the door for having more folks feel comfortable and safe to, even if we're not gonna move forward with prosecution, there are resources available for you. There's support available for you. You do not have to tolerate living in that type of environment. You should be able to engage with the community and survive without feeling like someone is over your shoulder, regardless of whether there's a crime or not. And those resources really need to come from the community-based organizations. And the partnership that you just described, with the significant emphasis on those community-based organizations, eliminates some of the fear that, oh, this is on the DA's website. Mm-hmm. Because it's coming from the different organizations. It's coming from the people. It's coming from the community. And so I'm just incredibly proud to see this all evolve. I will say that the Attorney General's office has had law enforcement agencies do a variety of different things with their hate crime policy, with hate crime pamphlets, and various different outreach materials that need to be provided in any law enforcement encounter. I intend to reach out to our contacts over at the AG's office, because I would like law enforcement in California to be able to modify that Attorney General approved pamphlet to include your QR code, so that it's not just an additional document that's provided. It would be included in part of all of the other resources. I know that can't be statewide because we're focusing on Orange County, but our pamphlet has already been approved by the Attorney General's office. So I'm going to reach out and make sure that there's an alternative way. I don't want it to get lost in the shuffle. Every reporting is important. Every incident is important to be tracked. And you have within the portal, which is going to be shown to us, mechanisms to show duplicate reporting, which is one of the things that we talked about extensively. And so I think that we're really going to get some good data and some opportunity to really reach people that didn't feel comfortable being reached to before. And I'm just incredibly grateful. And I look forward to everyone getting to see the hard work that you guys have put in.
Thank you. Commissioner Izzati, if I can just add just two things. One, the point that you made about communities feeling comfortable working and partnering with us, we've had this conversation with every community-based organization we've met with, but specifically right now, our Hispanic communities. So yesterday when we met with Latino Health Access, what they shared with us is the community trusts us. So if we trust you, you know, that we could be the liaison, but we have to be able to trust you. Like in the past, Medi-Cal data has been breached. DACA data has been breached. So we talked through that a little bit, and we told them, like, we don't need like front stage. We can be in the back in our regular clothes, just ready to answer questions, you know, in jeans and a t-shirt in the back of the room when you talk to people about resources. We don't need to be like making a big speech. We're here for you. And so we're having that conversation. And when we met with the NAACP, I know Deidre's here, we had a very spirited conversation premised in honesty and authenticity. It was not, we said things that needed to be said.
But that's why we're doing these conversations on a one-on-one basis, but kind of like breaking bread with one another so that we can start this partnership together and they can test our limits and we can test their limits and we can go together in a partnership. So we're doing that. With the QR code, the thing you mentioned about consistency, one of the things I would like to recommend, and that'll probably be the second next update that we give to you guys at some point down the future, is we think every police department should have a standard investigation form for hate crimes. So I started the DUI drug program in our office like 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And at that time, every police department was investigating DUI of drugs differently. And if they didn't suspect alcohol, they would just put a line through the report and write NA. And they weren't asking any questions about drugs. And so we created a standard form in the district attorney's office that every police department now uses as a standard form. We'd love to do that for hate crimes. Make sure that the questions are kind of like prompts, like what should this officer be asking? So they might not know, they might not have gone through our training. So DDA Glazier Mepfumo recently found the post approved form for hate crimes, and we're going to be rolling that out in the training and hope that someday, hopefully, the DA might be able to talk with the police chiefs about adopting that.
I want to make one last point about why it's so important to report hate incidents. Language leads to violence, and especially among young people. A lot of young people today think they have permission to engage in violence because of the horrific vulgarity that we are engaging in as a society against one another. And we all know some of our very influential leaders engage in terrible vulgarity, and it's becoming the standard and not the exception. And, you know, I'm engaged in political activity all the time, and I use an example where it's very, very hurtful. I mean, even when you put yourself out as a public figure in a public campaign, the things we say about each other have just crossed the line every single day. So I think it's an important message for us to be able to understand the incidents we have, so we can work with the Department of Education so they we can educate our young people that words against others that, you know, extract our differences as opposed to our similarities are what lead us to engage later in physical activities against each other, which morph into crimes. So I think there's a very important work to do on the incident side, because I would like to have a much better understanding of how incidents are affecting this county, and then utilizing our community-based organizations and our young, our school influencers in the schools. And some of you know, I used to be a high school teacher. That's where you have to do your education. You have to stop these young people from thinking it's okay. So that we, even though DOJ isn't collecting incidents, I think we have to make a major push out of this exercise to start to report and categorize incidents, because they do lead to future bad behavior. So I'm very committed to incidents.
Thank you so much. Commissioners, do you have any other questions?
Well, we appreciate everything. We appreciate the time. We took a lot of time, but we're very, very appreciative because we have a lot of work to do. I think we all know that, but what I hear from you all is you're all in, and everybody we're working with is all in. Because we're committed to this work and we can't thank you enough. So thank you for your time.
I want to thank you and thank your team. We're just really pleased to be able to work with you on this together. I think we will make a difference, and we'll make a difference in this state. Thank you for what you do every day.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, so
thank you, Commissioner.
So just a couple things on the incident portals.
I don't mean to be disrespectful. I got to read. Okay.
So as mentioned, what do we know about hate incidents? The California Health Interview Survey worked with the California Civil Rights Department, and they partnered to add questions around acts of hate. So they've done this in the past 2 years. So we know in 2023 and 2024 statistics, in 2024, as mentioned in our hate crime report, 9.8% of Orange County residents did say they had some type of act of hate. So as far as we're talking, there could be big numbers. What does that mean? That's 1 in 10 people in the past year. So yes, this portal can have large numbers, and it doesn't necessarily mean more things are happening. It just means that we're going to know more information around what's happening.
So the portals. I'm so sorry, Andrea. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose one of our commissioners in about 5 minutes. I want to make sure that we're still able to present if we don't have a quorum. We don't have any action items on our agenda, but I want to make sure as a matter of rule that we can continue to present.
My advisement would be yes, we can continue to present as long as no action is taken. No official action can be taken. We have the quorum to start the meeting. We can continue to receive information.
Our next meeting date is May 14, 2026 at 11 a.m. We covered that. Then let's continue. Thank you so much.
So with reporting, we do know that there's a lot of complication because we do allow anonymous reporting. So sometimes follow-up or more details around incidents that aren't reported right away can't be figured out. But I think what we've developed is a really comprehensive tool that we can use. So what we're looking at is number of people reporting hate incidents, but on the back end, how we've developed the portal, we'll be able to determine how many hate incidents. So there's a lot of information around those that we can hope to figure out which of those hate incidents could be duplicative. Because what we do know, there could be multiple victims around one hate incident or one potential hate crime. It is a hate incident reporting portal, but any type of act can be reported on this incident. So someone doesn't have to know if it was an incident, a crime, anything. And I think it's really important too, as the questions really hone in on, is the definition that the commission has decided around hate incidents. And one important thing is that the victim believes there was some type of hate that happened to them. So no one, there's no judgment. There's no, this didn't happen. This wasn't. It's what was perceived by the victim. So the questions were well designed to make sure to capture that so we can appropriately report out on the definition as decided. So here's where it starts. So it just gives that introduction to what the hate incident portal is, letting people know that it can be anonymously reported. It's voluntary information, so they don't have to submit everything, the only the ones that they decide. Click on to the next. Next, please. So anyone can report, as mentioned. So it could be the victim, it can be the witness, or it can be someone reporting on behalf of someone else that they heard. So when you click on one of these, we do have drop down. So just as an example, click on I am a witness. So do you represent a community organization? So this only pops up if they're a witness. If it's the person reporting upon themselves, it would go on to the next question. So we do capture community organization or potentially school, and not ask what kind of school district. So go ahead and just, I am the person targeted. Click back to that one. Next. So as we can see here, there are a couple of questions. Go ahead and click through a couple. How many people were targeted in the incident? So as mentioned, we do know that there are those solo incidents. There are incidents with multiple people there. What was the date closest to the incident? Sometimes the incident is reoccurring, right? So we do know that as well. Was it the single incident or more than once? Did the incident happen in a physical location or an online space? So when the person clicks the physical location, it does give examples of physical location, and vice versa, if it's online, it asks follow-up questions about those online details. And then click next. If you believe the race was a motivating factor, which race, county of origin, country of origin, religion or faith. So all of these are based on our definition of hate incident. So a hate incident can be determined based on religion or faith, sexual orientation, et cetera. So all these are based on that hate incident definition. So the person can click one or more of any of these categories when they're reporting and click to the next page. And then also, has the incident already been reported to law enforcement? So this was a question, another check to see if that incident was also duplicated in reporting efforts. Next, and if they do put yes, that does ask which law enforcement with a drop down. If there's anything else about the incident that they would like to share,
And also here, we maybe reach out to offer support services or ask more questions about the incident. So in this one, if they click yes, it does ask for those additional details so that someone could reach out to them and make sure that they get the support they needed. And then there at the end, there's a thank you message with where the person can get additional victim support, call or visit the website.
A question. Mm-hmm. Does the form allow you to select multiple reasons for bias?
Yes.
Okay. And is there any reason why when asking for resources, no is the first option instead of yes? It just came out that way.
No. Let's look back. We can definitely change that.
Oh, yeah. We can change that.
Yeah, we can change that. Yeah.
Incentivize it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll change that. That's a great idea. Good catch. Yeah. I have a lawyer right now. Multiple lawyers missed it, but that one got it.
So,
and how do you, is there duplicative entries? Is there a way to catch that so that you can't have maybe one person kind of spamming it in a way?
Well, we'd have to look at each one individually mm-hmm. just to make sure, just to protect the integrity of the database because if there's too many similarities and we don't actually get to see one, then we can't actually, it could be a different victim reporting the same thing, right? Okay. But hopefully people aren't spamming it. Although, you know, when something happens and the community feels that it's a hate crime, we do get bombarded, like the entire church or the entire synagogue or whatever will send us emails and we have like our boxes are flooded. You know, Courtney will probably have to just go in there and come up with a code that basically says this is all related to the first one.
Okay.
We get these form letters.
Okay. So if anything, it could help streamline some of this anyway.
Yes.
So,
okay. Yes. Yeah.
Great.
I was thinking more in terms of if you have an ethno-religion and someone is targeting you based on your ethnicity and religion, or alternatively, if someone is targeting someone for being LGBTQ and a rape, right? We want to be able to capture all of those things. That covers that. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you all for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Number seven. Thank you again to the RPTA's office for your incredible work.
I do have a couple of notes for great. Seven.
Okay.
Oh, we did.
I thought that was
the report.
Oh, it's the separate.
Yeah, it's a report.
Okay. We have to receive it.
Yeah, that's okay.
We still have Ada. We could have Ada stick around to receive the report.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, not to be counting.
No, you're right.
I could talk about it next meeting.
And you can just stick around for one moment. Thank you. We do have the next item, which is the receipt of the presentation on the 2024 hate crimes report. Can we receive that and then present on it?
There's no vote required.
There's no vote.
No.
We just need her here to receive it.
Sure. Yeah.
Correct.
What is the question? I'm here.
Do we need a vote to receive?
No.
You don't need a vote to receive.
Thank you.
However, there is a presentation.
We can move the until next time.
Yeah.
To next time. Yeah. So I would ask that we move this to next time. Do we need a vote on that?
Sure.
Yes. I'd ask. I move for us to move receipt of presentation of 2024 hate crime report to our next meeting.
Second.
Take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. We will move that to our meeting that's upcoming on May 14th. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ada. Now we're receiving an update from the County Executive Office.
Thank you. On behalf of Jessica and the CEO's office, just brief comments. We just look forward to working with the DA's office. We're already hard at work with them. Our data analytics team, which lives in CEO's office, will continue to do that, as well as with the commission. So we're just very grateful for that and prepared to better assist in the future in any way. And then I also had a note, if I can just speak to, I believe 8 and 9. regarding the Orange County Sheriff Department Interfaith Council update. Jessica has heard from Guy Steinberg that they are in a planning phase and that there are no additional updates at this time. So that, I think, covered those two items.
Much. And I understand that regard to an update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff has been communicated. We don't have an update there as well.
Okay.
Any announcements from commissioners? Well, I'll just announce we just did a lot today. And this was quite a meeting. And I just want to say how heartened I am to have so many members of the community here participating in this endeavor with us. We got a little heat last year because we made some changes and the county made some changes bringing things in-house. I think the direction that we're headed is a really healthy one and productive. And I'm just really grateful for the opportunity to work with our staff, with the community members, with the DA's office. In this collaborative effort, I know our goal is to make a difference and make this a better place for everyone to live. So I just wanted to thank you all for being here, everyone who's here in the audience. And with that, it appears that we are prepared to adjourn this meeting. So I don't know that we need a vote on that,
no,
but I would like to say I look forward to seeing you all on May 14th of 2026 at 11 a.m. for our regular meeting here. And same place. Thank you.